Hello, I'm Dan.
I'm Simon.
And this is the Wikicast, a podcast where Wikipedia takes us to a random article each week and we talk about what we find. Simon, what are we talking about this week?
This week, Daniel, we're talking about history of rail transport in Mozambique.
Of course we are.
Yeah, of course we are. Why would we not be talking about this? We've had a week
Why
off,
would we not?
A two-week sabbatical, and now we're back strong with the history of rail transport in Mozambique. Because, of course, as you may well know, the history of rail transport in Mozambique began in the latter years of the 19th century. It was, of course, a Portuguese colony, and in the 1870s, their initial plans to link the we've already got to the language section of this podcast, Lourenço Marques, now Maputo, by railway line with the area around Johannesburg in South Africa, which was a British possession. And then it basically went on. There's loads of different sections to this. It's actually a surprisingly long article for what is probably one of the most niche subjects, thank you, Sean Connery. In our history. What did you go to as Halloween? I went as Sean Connery's very attractive sister's daughter. Ah, it's pretty niche.
What's your favourite sport?
I don't know, Sean. What is your favourite sport?
Tennis.
A book fell on my head. I can only blame myself.
Yeah, nice.
Hanging around with Dr. Jones has just sort of ruined this style of humour for us. I was like, yeah, do you like the stop
food? How do you like the stop? We've got Dr. Jones, who is the organ scholar at Exeter Cathedral, is a Scot through and through. And
Aberdeen, I believe.
We never cease... Yes, we never cease in making fun of his accent, especially when if he's playing the organ and he's kind of communing with the director of music, whether it be Michael or Tim Noon.
Well, like via Ouija board.
Yeah, exactly. They don't speak. They're connected at some kind of like subatomic level. They'll always be talking about which stops to have on the organ, and that you can refer to the kind of the number of feet on the organ. Do you have the 4 foot, the 12 foot, the 16 foot, blah, blah, blah. Except for Dr. Jones, it's foot, which is just the funniest. I cannot.
Can I borrow the 16 foot for a moment?
Foot. I found you a sneaker.
Very good. That's that. You are very proud of that.
I was so pleased. So pleased.
I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Peter cried for a bit.
I mean, actually, so to tease later parts of the episode, we have something, a few other things which Dan is very proud of, which are going to come up in the movie review.
Very, very exciting.
He's a happy boy. Of course, before we were talking about Scottish organists and their accents, we were talking about the history of rail transport in Mozambique. What would you like to know, Dan? I'm looking at this Wikipedia article. What would you like to know?
What's the earliest track, did you say?
The first railway line opened between Lourenço Marques, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, and Rosano Garcia. It's Portuguese, so it probably is pronounced like that, on the 1st of March, 1890.
Wow.
And for 5 years, that was the only one, as in, like, there was only between two stations. And then 5 years later, there was the rest of the line was opened up across the border to Pretoria in South Africa.
Would you like to know the most ancient rail system? I mean, a fun fact for you.
Rail. Okay, now you're saying rail system, which means that it's not a steam powered railway,
no.
I'm assuming.
No, it's not. Okay, in that case, then, do you want to take a guess?
Oh, goodness.
Guess the year.
Can you give me a ballpark?
It's ancient world.
Oh, really? Wow. Gosh, crikey.
BC.
Rail system. BC. Well, yeah, thank you, Sherlock.
Nope, sorry.
Babylonia.
600.
Oh, okay, so that's too late for Babylonia. Where was that?
Evidence indicates that there was a 6 to 8.5 kilometre long Diolkos paved trackway which transported boats across Isthmus of Corinth in Greece from 600 BC. Wheeled vehicles pulled by men and animals ran in grooves in limestone which provided the track element preventing the wagons from leaving the intended route. Diolkos was in use for over 650 years until at least the 1st century AD.
So it was like a form of mechanical portage.
Basically. Which is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. I had no idea that it was that early, because I was expecting it to be something mining related or something.
Well, that's I'm on the article for the history of rail transport. And it speaks about that ancient system, and then there's a whole section on pre-steam. So in 1515, Cardinal Matthäus Lang wrote a description of the Reichszug, a funicular railway in, oh my God, here we go, Hohensalzburg Castle in Austria. The line originally used wooden rails and a hemp haulage rope. Nice. Kinky. Yeah. And was operated by human or animal power through a treadwheel. The line still exists and is operational. 1515.
Now, funicular railways still exist, don't they? They're the ones that go up. Oh, yeah, because where Pixel Girl is from, which is Bridge North in Shropshire, there is a very steep cliff railway where you get pulled up like in a cable car.
Oh, we should also, I can't believe I didn't make this connection before, the Grand Budapest Hotel famously features funicular.
Ah, of course. Yeah.
Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
I found, ooh, also, I saw an amazing thing online the other day. They say you can buy a pack of Wes Anderson character top trump cards.
Oh, really?
And they're all designed, like the aesthetic of the card is designed in his kind of, you know, those kind of like pastel colours and Futura font. And I'm going to buy a pack, I've decided. I think it's amazing.
Did you notice that the what the font was on the new Chapel Choir CD? Plug, plug, plug.
Which
actually isn't out yet, so it's not a plug.
Yeah.
It's also Futura. I designed a full CD in the, I think, between, oh, no, I think we did talk about it last time. But yeah, I finished designing a CD, which was a fun experience.
Futura is the king of fonts.
It's pretty great, like, and it suits our aesthetic. It really does. Mm. Although Michael was trying to tell me, our choir director Michael was trying to say, yeah, but it doesn't really matter, does it? Fonts really don't matter. And I was like, mate, let's not say things we can't take back, for one thing. And you're also completely wrong.
Comic Sans, okay, sure.
Yeah, let's just do... Well, it was like when the first CD we had was called Hail Gladdening Light, and we did a second version, which obviously didn't get printed, which was Hail Gladdening Light, all in Comic Sans. And with Michael's face as possibly my favorite Photoshop of all time, Michael as an orange put in the sun, like the Teletubbies. But yeah, what I was going to say. So yeah, funicular railways. Yeah, because fun fact about Bridge North. In fact, on the article for funicular railways, there is a picture of Bridge North Cliff Railway. If you're curious about what it looks like, Bridge North was where Hitler was going to put his headquarters for his occupation of the UK. If the Nazis ever invaded the UK, that would be where Nazi HQ would be, which is somewhat random location. It's because it's very defendable. Like, it's a massive, like, it looks almost like a volcanic plug. It's like a very steep hill with a river around it. So if it was like a medieval town, it'd be basically impenetrable. So Hitler was like, that's the one, because he was a notoriously sane person. But there was, I swear there was another one. Oh, no, it was a water railway. Were you there when Mum and Dad took... I know Liv was there. Pixel Girl was there. Were you there when we went? It was nearby.
Didn't we try and eat there? And then we had to go somewhere else because it was busy.
Linson and Lynmouth.
Yes. Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Which was really, really cool, because there were these two carts that go opposite each other. Like, as one goes up, the other one goes down, and it's powered by sloshing water around. I'm a bit of a railway fan. I was a massive fan of Thomas the Tank Engine when I was a kid, and I still have.
Me too.
A
that was my
bucket of like tin models of them.
See, I had the old. Can you remember the? You could get those. You could buy them anywhere, and kind of every household had exactly the same, like, brand. It was those wooden railways.
Oh yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Really simple, but like, oh man, they were the absolute best. And then I remember getting for one of my birthdays. I think I was probably 17, 18, no, I'm kidding, three or four, I got a Thomas the Tank Engine set, and you could basically recreate the entirety of the Isle of Sodor, and the little trains were electric, so you could set them on the tracks and set them to go. And I remember there's a photo of, like, Dad holding me in his arm. We built it in the spare room, and I'm absolutely just buzzing. So cool.
Because Dad and I had a model railway. He used to be really into it when he was a kid, so when, I don't know, this was when I was like sort of from the age of about four, I guess, to the age of about 10. Mm. We had one in my room, which was built, and like building the terrain out of papier-mâché and putting like felt down for grass and fake trees and everything. And hang on. Oh, I should not have had that coat before we started. we also had like Thomas the Tank Engine, double O gauge Hornby. Railway sets. So you had like Thomas and Percy and Annie and Clarabelle. Yes, I still remember all their names after all this time. Always.
Oh yeah, of course. Can't forget it.
And then we had one up in the loft, which was amazing because it was like a wraparound one. You went up in the, it was like a donut shape with a massive mountain on one side of you and then like a town on the other side. And in the mountain was all the sidings. And then that was double O gauge, and then there was a smaller narrow gauge, which so like the engines are like an inch long, which went up the top of the mountain. And it was like a transfer station, so you could pretend that like they were taking goods from inside the mountain to the town for processing, and then like taking them up the cliffs of the mountain on the narrow gauge railway. I really loved doing that with Dad. So I said it was one of those classic like father son activities, you know, lots of happy memories. So I'm a big fan of railways.
I'm just finding now a list of some of the fastest trains in the world.
Okay, so you've got like the bullet train in Japan, obviously. You've got the TGV in France. There's the Chinese one.
The Shanghai Maglev was relaunched this year.
Yeah, I remember that happening, actually, because Maglev is...
267.8 miles per hour.
Yeah, well, that's what happens if you don't touch the ground. It's, you know,
that
magnetic levitation.
That is insane. Yeah.
Well, because did you ever play Transport Tycoon? I know you would have watched it.
No. I played Roller Coaster Tycoon personally. I was looking for something a bit more serious and kind of like a real kind of management game.
Of course. You know? Well, I mean, I remember playing a Roller Coaster Tycoon, Zoo Tycoon, Transport Tycoon, because I brought it up because within that, for those of you that don't know, you're a tycoon of transport companies, and one of the sets is like trains, and so you can build traditional tracks, in which case you go from steam to diesel to electric trains as you kind of go through the years, because it goes from like 1950, I think it starts, maybe 80, maybe 1900. And then after that, you have monorails, and then you have maglevs. So from a young age, it's like I was completely aware from like, I don't know, age six or seven, I was like completely aware of magnetic levitation as a concept. I was like, looking back, that was definitely not normal. But they also made a really cool sound in the game. They kind of made like a sound. It was like very, very Star Trek doors opening kind of sound, but we know it because it's
I'm
the
trying
Oscar
to remember
Jingle Jam do it every year, which is one of our favorite. It's coming up, actually. It's not long. It's 2 weeks until the Jingle Jam.
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
that's so exciting.
Oh, it's gonna be amazing. This is probably more of a public safety announcement, really. If you are a gamer and you're listening to this, for one, if you don't know who the Oscast are, they're a group of YouTubers who do amazing stuff. We love their stuff, and there's like, I don't know, 20 channels or something crazy in them now, but they do every December a live stream for the whole month of December. They'll stream every day, and it's from like 2 p.m until like midnight. It's really amazing. And they're raising money for charity.
It's a heroic effort.
Yeah, it's truly heroic. They're raising money for charity, which varied over the years. And I think they've raised, last year it was over £2 million. And in total it's like 5 million, which is crazy. It's something like that. And the way that they raise money is they do a Humble Bundle, which is available year-round as a service where you basically pay a small amount of money and you get lots of games at a discount. But their Humble Bundle in December is very special because you get so many games, like 30 or 40 games. And I think it's... I think, is it £25 or $25 that you get them all?
I think it's $25.
Yeah. So it's incredible value for money because you get stuff that, you know, it's worth like $300 or $400 if you were to pay full price for all of it.
And because it's such a kind of, you know, developers know it's such a good cause, you get some kind of A-list games appearing on there for just comically cheap. Yeah. Just to kind of, you know, the money there, I wonder how much did they raise last year?
It was like 2.1 million. It was something crazy. Because they do the live streams and, you know, so people will donate to the Humble Bundle and then you get all those games. And that's like, you can view it as a business transaction, really. But then in addition to that, people will just donate to the live streams because they're enjoying it. And we bloody love the live streams. We've got some favorites that they do every year. Like Hat Films will do a, create an album live on stream, along with classic songs like Pleasure Elf and Everyone's Talking About My Dick, and Shipping and Receiving, lest we forget. But then, you know, they'll also do stuff like, I don't know, Jingle Cats, where they'll just watch shite YouTube videos and chat about it for hours and hours and hours. And they also do a Dungeons and Dragons.
You choose your own adventure books.
Oh yeah, the adventure books.
Which are my mate, because I used to read those as a kid. The Forest of Doom and the Warlock of... was it the Warlock of something Mountain?
But now
Rock Mountain, I think, or something.
A new one has been written, and they actually have references to the Oxcast in it, which is really cool.
Yeah, which is
I hope
amazing.
They do that one this year.
the final total last year, $2,577,801 was donated by 86,573 people.
Christ. It is amazing. And it does, and it's like Oxfam, it goes to Médecins Sans Frontières, End Polio Now, Special Effects, which is an awesome little charity that helps kids with disabilities be able to enjoy games, basically.
GamesAid.
Games Aid.
The last year's charities included Mental Health Foundation, Cancer Research UK, International Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex Association, Whale and Dolphin Conservation, Special Effect and Games Aid, as well as a new option to choose a charity of your choice.
Yeah, and if I remember rightly, you certainly could in previous years, you could sort of donate an amount of money and then you had sliders for how much you wanted to go to each charity. Which was pretty cool. But yeah, so basically this is a massive advert for them. It's going to happen in 2 weeks, and if you are a gamer, you should definitely check it out at the Oxcast Twitch, and they'll be uploading stuff about it on the YouTube channel soon, I imagine. And if you just like entertainment and if you like our sense of humor, highly recommend you check it out. There'll be like a streaming schedule on their subreddit, or you could just tune in on the Twitch on a given night and just see what's going on, because it'll be something and it'll be kind of amazing.
That's the best thing. There were times last year where we'd just come home, we wouldn't realise that there was a really good one on, and then we'd suddenly switch it on and go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the Hat Films doing Dungeons & Dragons, or the Star Wars one.
That's amazing. So that bundle, 60 games, DLCs and items were sold in the bundles, with two new games or items being added every single day. So it really is, if you're keen on your games... Or you're not, and you want to kind of branch out, this is the best way to do it, because you'll get the sheer kind of breadth of games for the price that you'll be, paying is incredible.
Yeah, definitely. So we talked about that for quite a while. Sorry if you are bored about gaming, but, this is our podcast, so fuck you. Something that happened yesterday, Dan, we should probably talk about this because we're a current events podcast, of course. What happened in your beloved Australia last night?
In Australia, there was a vote, a kind of a poll, before the official votes go through, to see whether the kind of nation of Australia as a whole would be supporting gay marriage.
Yeah, this doesn't enshrine it into law, is that right? This was like a referendum on, what the public intent is. It still has to be signed into law.
Yeah, it was a postal survey. I think, it says 61.6% of people in favour of allowing same-sex couples to wed. The Australian Bureau of Statistics has said, which is fantastic, which is really good, and I'm very, very proud to be an Australian. When I heard that news,
it's awesome. It is somewhat worrying, I suppose. Oh, and hang on, Australia made it into the World Cup as well.
No, really?
Well, yesterday.
It's all coming up, Aussies.
Yeah, everything's coming up, Milhouse.
What's the most amazing thing, I think, other than the statistic of obviously, there's a clear majority that are in favour, more than 12.7 million people, so that's nearly 80% of eligible voters took part in the vote, which is incredible, just that sheer amount of kind of activism and people wanting their voices to be heard.
It's definitely a topic that you have a strong opinion on one way or the other, I think. I think if anybody is opposed to it, because I think it'd be fair to say that basically everybody we know and we would talk to on a daily basis wouldn't have a problem with gay marriage, apart from possibly one northern organist that we sometimes see. If you are opposed to it, you're very vehemently opposed to it. There's no middle ground when it comes to this issue, it seems. So that doesn't surprise me in a way, but it is also somewhat worrying that, 39% or whatever it was of people still oppose it, but at least it's the majority that are now in favour. So good on you, Australia.
Yeah. A friend of mine, actually, who is on, he does campus like radio at the University of Melbourne. He's a very good friend of mine called Jack. He made a really, really good post yesterday about his thoughts before the results were announced. I'm just going to read you a quick extract because I thought it was really quite poignant. He said,
on the scene reporting,
I wanted to jot down my thoughts on the results of the postal survey being announced tomorrow. Firstly, I'm trying to remain hopeful that it'll be a resounding yes, but if it's a no, then please support LGBTQ+ friends, because they'll be hurting at the knowledge that they live in a society that doesn't see them as equal. Secondly, and more importantly, if it's a yes, that's great, but the fight is far from over. The plebiscite has thrown a ton of hateful rhetoric at the LGBTQ+ community, and the only possible upside to this is that our allies and people on the fence have seen just a glimpse of how much hate comes their way. What they, maybe you don't see, is the hate we experience all too often. Me and some friends start walking down a street last night and we're being called faggots. As a small example of this, marriage equality is just the first step in a larger societal acceptance issue. Not to mention the bill has to still be passed through Parliament, and if one of the proposed by James Patterson has anything to say by it, who's one of the MPs, it has a potential for further attacking the rights of LGBTQ plus people. Which I thought was really true. So it wasn't kind of tainting the news, but it's saying it's kind of like, this isn't going to be a, oh, we've got it, problem solved. It's one step in a long kind of battle.
We're in the same position that people who read the Daily Mail were in when the Brexit vote was announced.
Mm.
And they were all like, oh yeah, we're going to get out. And all of those fantastic EU regulations that keep us safe are going to be repealed overnight. And then nothing happened.
And that's still, I mean, again, to be topical, it's going awfully, isn't it? They still haven't kind of agreed on a final bill for the UK to pay, but it's going to be just insane.
It's almost as if it was a terrible idea to begin with.
Mm.
Just putting it out there. Just an idea. Moving on though, because we're probably going to get a million angry emails about that from those two topics alone. Something which was also a terrible idea, but was awesome. We went to had one of the, I can honestly say, one of the most bizarre evenings of my life. The other weekend we went to a place called Ottery St Mary. And what happens in Ottery St Mary, Dan?
Well, what can only be described, I think, as complete and utter mayhem breaks out on Guy Fawkes Night. Basically, you'll be walking through what is really quite a small rural town.
It's like less than 10,000 people lived there. It's like 5,000 population or something.
Yeah. So apparently the town's population of 7,000 increases to well over 10,000 at the event.
To be honest, I think that's... I'd be amazed if it was that few people coming in. It felt when you were in the crowd, it felt like there were a lot more than 3,000 people at the whole event.
Yeah,
definitely. I vlogged the evening, so there will be a video about this, because at the end of the day, it's one thing to talk about this event, and we haven't yet said what's so special about this. You have to really see it to believe it. It's a bit like The Matrix. What were people coming there for, Dan?
So, a tradition that dates back from the 17th century. Barrels soaked in tar are set alight and carried aloft through parts of the town by residents. So these aren't small little kind of like, imagine like if you're, I don't know, a small keg or a beer barrel or like a barrel of musket or something. These barrels that go up to like, I don't know, it's 30 kilos. So, I mean, the sheer kind of amazement of being able to lift one of these things properly right the way above your head is incredible. So completely soaked in tar, as we've said. And then lit a light and then just leg it through the streets carrying one of these over your head. Bearing in mind, there is no real space on these streets because it is absolutely packed full of people. So
yeah, imagine if you take the crowd at like a football game or something and you just put them all on a flat plane instead of in seats. They're all crammed together like it's Helm's Deep or something.
Mm.
There is just a dude with a barrel literally on fire. The man is basically as close to being on fire as it is possible to be without becoming a human torch. And he's just running through. But then there's the changeover, right? Because the people who carry the barrels are residents or have been residents of Ottery St Mary for generations. But then they transfer the barrels by basically just... Well, they basically wrestle, don't they?
Mm. Yeah, you've got to fight for your right, not to be free, as a Les Mis joke there.
Or to party.
But to carry, pick up the torch, as it were. It was unbelievable. I'd never been before.
No, neither me.
And it was, I'd never seen anything like it. You don't realise the sheer size of the barrels, the sheer amount of fire. I mean, it's a pretty dangerous event, to be honest.
The other thing to mention is there is basically no health and safety whatsoever. And to their credit, they will put on the sign saying, you know, if you don't like crowds or loud noises or fire, this isn't the event for you. You know, just don't.
There was an amazing sign we saw as we were leaving that just was kind of, it looked like a normal road sign that was going to say like, beware, you know, zebra crossing in 20 yards, but it just said, warning. Blazing tar barrels, and you're like, oh yeah, just in case you missed those things kind of herring up and down the street. It was just incredible.
But Because yeah, they there will just be these guys running, and there are no like safety barriers or anything, or even any security. There are just people running with flaming barrels, and these things are like what, 4 foot across and like two or 3 feet wide.
Mm.
Just running. And people getting within inches. When I was filming, one of the guys stumbled a bit and came towards me, and I realized just how close he was. He was like 2 or 3 feet from me. You could feel it was close enough to feel the heat on your face as they ran past.
If you go, if people want to have a quick look at what it's like, either YouTube tar barrels, or you can go to my Instagram. It's Dan Moore, DanMaw, and I uploaded some photos and kind of a short clip when we were right next to one of the largest barrels that went through, and you'll see what we mean. It's bedlam and amazing.
Yeah, it was. Because the thing is, though, in a way, that wasn't even the craziest thing that happened that night. The whole evening was... I mean, the vlog will go into
this. Oh my gosh, yeah.
Suffice to say, we had the coolest taxi driver ever who... Because the village goes into lockdown. The town, whatever you want to call it, goes into lockdown. And there were, like, roadblocks. And so we had a taxi to take us in. The whole point of a taxi, you know, is that you get dropped off right at your destination. And so our taxi driver got to one roadblock, turned around, and went to another one. And as far as I could tell, he basically just went, fuck it, and went through. Yeah. And another guy tried to like ram him off the road, and he just kept going.
It was amazing. He was quite possibly the best taxi driver I've ever had.
Best. It was amazing. It was such banter. And we got to this lady's house, possibly the most English person I've ever met in my life, like a walking stereotype. And we loved her. All the choir, because there were like 10 of us from the chapel choir. He went to this event in a group, and we all afterwards were like, can we adopt her? She's now our chapel choir granny. She's amazing.
She was just unbelievable.
And again, only the vlog will do it justice, but suffice to say, she was mad as a box of cats. She invited the taxi driver in and like sat him down and interrogated him about his life story, and gave him tea and crumpets and stuff like that whilst we were all drinking and stuff in the other room. And then she drove us into town in her tiny little car and was like, just to let you know, I'm a terrible driver. And then rocketing through these lanes with a completely fogged up windscreen.
That was probably the most
dangerous thing we did all night.
Yeah, she was just lovely, and she prepared all this food for us and was just plying us with alcohol and whatever, basically ever anything she could think of. And she was telling us these, you know, we were all literally gathered around in the dining room. There was a kind of roaring fire going, and we were all sitting around the table or kind of sitting in a chair or leaning up against one of the walls. And it was a really old cottage, so incredibly low ceilings. There were low ceilings by my standard. So I mean, I don't know how you felt, Simon, but you're probably struggling a little bit.
I had to bend over to get into every room, yeah.
But she was kind of regaling us with all these amazing stories of her kind of youth and her past, and talking about her husband was a lawyer and she used to do work with the BBC. And she was fascinating, fascinating woman. Shout out to Sally, absolute lad.
Yeah, Sally, if you ever end up listening to this, we think you're nuts and wonderful, and please never
change. Knees.
There's so much that's happened in the past 2 weeks. This is what happens when we don't do a podcast every week. But we do want to keep this one a little bit shorter. I think perhaps one other thing that I want to mention is the fact that we now have a shit poster. We have Dan's forehead. It's a big presence. On YouTube, it turns out.
He's
been doing some remixes of us from the podcast about how much I like cats. So shout out to Dan's forehead. We're really enjoying those.
It is hilarious. really good.
Keep them coming our way. But before Dan's actual forehead explodes from keeping this information in, I think we should take a little hop, skip, and a jump over to film and YouTube and TV corner. What did we say we were going to call this?
I can't remember, but I think that film, YouTube, and TV corner certainly rolls off the tongue. Not.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll think of a bit. I'd also quite like us to have like a little jingle to put in these bits, like the hats do. You know, how in Hat Chat there'll be like a diddle. If you could please compose something that could go into the podcast as like a little stopgap between sections, that would be great. But for now, we're going to make do with this impression of a TIE fighter by Dan. Go.
Roy, 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 Roy.
You're a
This is a reference because Simon is convinced he can do the best impression of a TIE fighter. That impression involves him saying the word Roy over and over again.
Right. Several things though. I mean, we're now in the corner, so we can.
Not right. Roy.
I'm not convinced that it's A, I'm not convinced, and B, it's definitely not the best impression. And C, there's like, I swear there's like two shots, and please back me up on this. Email us at spongyelectric@gmail.com with this. I swear there's like two or three shots where the TIE fighter is going away from you, and it does make a sound that sounds like Roy. It's not quite like that. It's like a kind of sound.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But like, as it's coming towards you, it's different. Yeah. Mm. Well, Ham, can you do your impression of a TIE fighter then as it's coming towards you?
I can't do an impression of a TIE fighter. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That was me, in case you were confused. that's a slight... Oh, that's not a spoiler, that's a teaser. There's something related to Star Wars coming up on my channel, if I can get it ready in time, because thesis is very intense. But also, I'm nearly finished. I didn't tell you this, mate. I've last night, I left work at midnight, and I have almost completely finished the second and last results chapter of the thesis. So now I just need to write a summary of that chapter, do one more plot, and then write a conclusion, which is like 4 or 5 pages. So I'm really close to getting the whole thing complete, and then it's just subject to supervisor's comments. But so it's really intense, but there is something I'm working on in the background about Star Wars, which is I'm really, really excited for. But what is your news? What happened to you this week, Dan? Because it's the most Dan thing that's ever happened.
It's super exciting. I was very, very pleased. So regular listeners would not be surprised to hear us mention the Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode film podcast on Radio 5 Live. It's
what?
Really, really excellent.
You've never mentioned this before.
What? Exactly.
You've been cheating on me with another podcast.
It's fantastic. It's a really, really good podcast for kind of massive film buffs like Simon and myself. We're absolutely kind of obsessed with it. Anyway, I recently saw Murder on the Orient Express, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had one of my rare occasions where I actually had some time off from work, so I thought, you know what? I'm going to go and see a film by myself, and I don't even care. It's not sad. It's completely acceptable. So I went and saw that, and it was really good. I came home and then immediately jumped onto my laptop and composed my kind of thoughts on the film and sent it off, because every now and then they'll read out kind of correspondence, much like they do on this podcast. We do on this podcast. And would you believe that they actually read out my email, which is very exciting. I didn't know they'd done this, but thanks to Jamie on Twitter, he actually tweeted at me saying, just heard your email on @Wittertainment, Tinkety Tong Cold Fruit, which is a reference to the podcast. And I listened to it. So if listeners want to have a listen to my email being read out, I think the timestamp, it's the episode with Toby Jones, and it's kind of 41 minutes, 12 seconds. I didn't write that down. I've committed it to memory. But it was really nice. And I was really glad that Mark, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for as a film critic, and just a kind of a voice on film, completely agreed with me. And it was, really, really good. But
it was the most you thing I think that's ever happened. I've got to say, like, I was listening to it back and I sent it to Pixel Girl, and we were just like, this is so him. I completely concede that, like, it's probably a very good film and your analysis is probably spot on, which would be very like you. But it was the fact that an Agatha Christie adaptation made you cry.
It's not the, and in the email I didn't say specifically that it's not the adaptation that makes me cry. It's one of those rare instances where the combination of music and on-screen visuals just hits you in a way.
Otherwise known as a movie.
Well, no, but like you can be watching a film and there can be some music in the background or some audio, and it still doesn't do the same because you're weeping at the connection to the character. But I felt like the only reason I had that response was because that music was there underneath. Kenneth Branagh is a fantastic actor, and you know, like 9 times out of 10, anything he does, people are going to see and be like, oh yeah, then that was really excellent. But it was the combination of his performance and the clear, close working with Patrick Doyle on the soundtrack that they melded this moment together. And the music was the glue that kind of... it was just incredible. I think you would even for a cold, unfeeling person like yourself, you'd watch the film and be, actually, you know what? That was really, really good.
It is something that if I get the chance to, if I'm on a plane, perhaps sometime in the very near future, Can't talk about that. I'd like to watch it. I would like to. I am just, as I said before, I am very, very busy at the moment. But yeah, I would like to, because I do like a lot of the people in it, not least one of our faves, Daisy Ridley's in it, along with, who else is in it? It's got an amazing cast, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's got Daisy Ridley in it. It's got, hang on. Murder on the Orient Express cast. We have the likes of Kenneth Branagh, Johnny Depp, Daisy Ridley, ooh, Michelle Pfeiffer, Judi Dench, Penelope Cruz, wow, Josh Gad, William Dafoe.
What about his cousin, Willem Dafoe? He's much nicer.
Derek Jacobi. It's just amazing. It's like, honestly, it's incredible. The cast is superb.
Yeah,
and it's directed by Branagh as well.
Who was the cinematographer?
I don't know. Talk amongst yourselves.
Sorry, listeners. I just sent Dan off into the archives. That's funny. There's no planet in the archives.
Haris Zambaloukos.
Not a name I know. Is there a
so he did Cinderella 2015, which Branagh also directed.
Yeah.
The first Thor film. Mamma Mia.
Right, okay. I know exactly what this film looks like.
Eye in the Sky.
No, you're kidding.
No, deadly serious.
Oh, wow, that film keeps coming back. Yeah. It's a gift that keeps... For God's sake, guys, if you haven't seen Eye in the Sky, you really need to lock yourself in a dark room and...
Superb film.
Wow, okay. No, I definitely want to see it. But something else which you saw recently, which we actually talked about in the podcast before, was Thor Ragnarok.
I did. I went and saw that
now, what did you
two
think?
Nights ago. Here's the thing.
Oh, here we go.
I went.
Pull up the chairs,
I went in.
Kids.
I went in wanting to. Ed and I went to the Odeon. We grabbed some bevs. We had a full pack of beers to share. A load of kind of sweets and chocolate and goodies like that. Sat down and all I wanted to do was sit in a dark room, watch a film, and kind of switch my brain off. I saw Thor. I did exactly that. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good film. It was very fun. I don't think I thought the balance didn't work. It was trying to be too comic, which then jeopardized the moments of seriousness. I also thought that the story, the off-world story, as in the off Asgard world story, when they're on that kind of the crazy kind of junk planet and they're meeting all these weird aliens, and that was so much more interesting because it was quirky and weird.
Oh God, it really was.
It was so much better. And then it almost felt like there was an obligation to return to the classic, oh, but there's a big baddie and it's going to destroy everything and we're going to have to team up and try and take it down, you know, like, and it was all right. The performances were good. It was shot well, it was written well, but it just felt really kind of, it felt really hammed on and formulaic. Which is disappointing because I thought the film was a really good step in the right direction as to what comic book films should be, in that it wasn't taking itself too seriously. The kind of the monologuing to camera that Thor was doing, and I thought it was funny. To mention Mark Kermode, he has something called the six laugh test, whereas if a film is calling itself a comedy, there needs to be at least six out loud laugh moments, and it far excelled that. It was a really funny film. A lot of that would have to do with what's his name? New Zealand director
Taika Waititi
did What We Do in the Shadows.
His character Korg.
It was really, really good. But it was lost by that kind of miscommunication of what the film kind of genre was trying to be.
Would you agree that the opening third, where Hela, the Kate Blanchett's character, is introduced, would you agree that that third is particularly weak?
Yeah, well, I don't think the third itself is weak. It's made to look weak by the rest of it.
Right.
And that's what I mean by balance. I don't think any of the film is poorly written, and I don't think any of it's explicit, just kind of like, oh, that's just not particularly good writing or filmmaking. I think it's all fine, but because of the combination of the two and the two differences, it makes other elements, it makes those Hela moments look weaker than they actually are.
But I just think they are objectively... I thought the introduction of her character and the way that Doctor Strange... That whole section on Earth, like basically everything... The very beginning with Thor in the lava planet with the demon, I thought that was fantastic. I was like, yes, this is brilliant. I'm going to really enjoy this film. And then from that point, basically, until he arrived on the junk planet, I thought was really quite bad.
It just, it definitely felt, I think if I was to give it any criticism, it felt the pacing was wrong. You could tell that they were trying to really kind of like, look, we've got places to be, let's just get rid of this kind of expository section. I don't know. It was a good film. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was, you know.
I enjoyed it. And like I say, I think maybe my enjoyment was somewhat tempered by my company, whereas you went with Ed, who for all his faults is good fun to go to movies. Oh no, oh God, did he talk like last time?
No, it was very good, actually.
This is a PSA. This is right. This is a public announcement. Anybody talks during movies, I just want you to take a moment. Step back and literally f*** your own face. It is not okay, okay? Don't talk during movies.
That's an amazing thing. Again, this is the last time I'm going to mention Kermode and Mayo, but they have a film code of conduct.
Yes.
Which is, it's called Wittertainment's Code of Conduct. I'll provide a link in today's description of the podcast so you can go and see it. I'm going to quickly run through them now. No eating of anything harder than a soft roll with no filling. No one wants to hear you crunch, chew, or masticate in any other way. Nachos call special offence and are of the devil. No slurping of drinks. You already drunk
now,
a 5-litre flagon.
Is popcorn allowed? It's just...
Popcorn? Oh yeah, of course, popcorn's fine. But you don't really crunch popcorn, do you? Really?
It isn't the quietest thing. It's not like eating a soft roll, but it's still pretty quiet. And for me, the popcorn is an essential part of the cinema going experience.
Yeah. No, I think popcorn's completely fine. They said no slurping of drinks. You've already drunk a 5-litre flagon of pop. You don't really need the melting of ice too. You're not a 6-year-old. No rustling of super high density Russell-O-Matic extra Russell bags. No foraging of any kind. If you're going to need it during the film, get it out beforehand, which I totally agree with. No irresponsible parenting. So if it's a, you know, your 5-year-old doesn't want to come to see a 12A, be considerate. No mobile phone usage, not even on flight mode. Just keep it dark, keep it black. We don't want to be seeing like light coming up. No kicking of seats, no hobbies. This includes knitting, drug dealing, model aeroplane assembly, fighting, having sex, and updating Facebook. No arriving late, which that really annoys me. No talking, and oh my God, there was a quite a large group of, I would say probably early 20s, early kind of mid to mid 20s people, maybe 7 of them came in about 15 minutes into the adverts, and they just didn't shut up. Thankfully they hushed down when the film, you know the aspect ratio changes and you're like, oh, the film's about to start, and you get the BFC like guideline, you know, so it's like, this film has been approved for blah blah. And then they shut up, but it was just like open talking as if they were in a bar. I'm like, you don't dark in here. You're in a cinema. Also, and no shoe removal is their final rule, which I completely agree with.
In a cinema, yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah, I think if you're in your own home, a lot of these don't apply, but like, yeah. But yeah, no, Ed has been a particularly egregious breaker of rules when it comes to films.
There was an amazing... Are you going to talk about the popcorn incident?
What was the popcorn incident?
We went and saw... Now, I think it was Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Mm. We were sitting in one of the... It was in view, one of the big, big screens. And we were there with quite a lot... Right. There were quite a lot of chapel folk. And we'd seen... It was the midnight release. And we were sitting at the back, and Ed... He got up midway through the film and needed to go to the bathroom, which is another thing that pisses me off. Like, a forward plan. It's like you're going on a car journey. You wee at home. Come on. Anyway, he got out to go, and to try and not draw attention to himself, he kind of was kind of bent quite low and kind of quickly kind of ran down the stairs in the center aisle to get out so he wasn't going to get in the way of people. What he didn't realize was, because it's very dark and he can't see anything, the speed at which he was taking these stairs meant that if he kind of bumped into something, things wouldn't go well. And what didn't go well is that he managed to perfectly dropkick a massive box of popcorn. And what I can only describe as an explosion on the screen, as in people were watching and they suddenly saw like a party popper go off, popcorn go every... Like this thing flew right the way down. Like, oh, it was so funny. And then Ed being Ed, suddenly like stands up and it's like, oh, sorry.
The sound effects of him running, he's just like, and boom!
Yeah, honestly.
Popcorn flies everywhere.
I remember Michael was sitting next to me and he was just like, oh, for fuck's sake. Like, it was amazing. It was hilarious.
If we're going to tattletale about cinema stories, we have to mention, I can't remember what we went to see. It was just the two of us, though. We went to see something in review again.
Yeah.
And it was when we were, imagine there are two sets of seats and there's like an aisle in the middle, and we were sat on the second set of seats as you come away from the door. And so what I did was what a normal person would do, which is go up the middle aisle and then just walk across. But because the seats were at the far end, you were like, ah, no, Dan's smarter than that. Dan's going to go up around the back of the second set of seats, and proceeded to just walk at full pace straight into the wall, because there wasn't a gap between the seats and the wall. So you were just like, yeah, watch this. This is going to be
doof. it was like a
Looney Tunes cartoon.
In my defense, I think, I certainly remember it, we walked in, and we'd walked in at the point where the adverts had started playing, so it was very, very dark. And I wear glasses.
And it was a black wall.
Yeah, and it was a black... So, like, I genuinely thought that I could just walk down one aisle, nip round the end, because there'd be, like, another long kind of walkway. So walk down one row of seats to get to the other aisle, and then just turn round and join the next row. But instead of doing that, I walked quite purposely down this row of seats and straight into a wall.
It was so purposeful. There was just like no hesitation whatsoever. You just properly face planted into this wall.
It was like Mrs. Weasley had given me instructions to walk through 9 3/4.
The worst thing was then when you had to come back around and then just do what I'd done in the first place. The long walk around the row of seats.
The walk of shame, yeah. God, it was very embarrassing.
Oh dear. But no, Ed does sometimes talk. It was when we went to see Star Wars and he just talked throughout, and I was like, Ed, shut up. Like, people don't need spoilers, but the film's been out for ages. I swear at one point he literally went, oh, this is the bit where Han Solo dies. And I was like, Ed, shut the fuck up. Like, this is not okay.
No,
my goodness. Okay, but moving from the big screen to the small screen where you can't walk into walls as easily, we have now both seen all of Stranger Things. I'm right in saying that, aren't I? Yeah.
Yes.
What would your brief review of the season, Dan?
I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I really, really thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought to see how much the kids have grown up, their performances were superb. Mm. I thought that I really, really enjoyed the story aspect, going from a point of it's being led by characters who are familiar with the Upside Down, and that almost makes it scarier because they kind of know what they're dealing with now. Just the actual and the filmmaking aspect of it too. It looks gorgeous. It's just really, really well done. And I, again, no news to anyone. The final episode when they're at the school dance, I was like, I just said dance. What the hell's going on?
Sorry.
when they're at the school dance, was just lovely. It was really sweet. And I was like, oh, I got a little bit emotional.
Of course you did. You cry when the toaster pops up.
It's true.
You're just like, it's the number three. It's just the right amount of brown. But if I was to review the season, I'd say it definitely wasn't as good as the first season in my mind. And I know that Pixel Girl, for example, disagrees. She thinks this one was better. I think basically because it's not new. It's the first one, people had a problem with it because it was derivative of things like E.T. and stuff like that. But I think this one was unimaginative in that it didn't really develop any more mythos than the first season, if you know what I mean. Like, the first one, you had the mysterious energy company, and there was the new Upside Down, what the Demogorgon was. Whereas this time it was like, oh, they're demidogs. It's the same stuff, and it's the same energy, shady energy stuff. And yeah, now there's the twist that there's number 8 as opposed to the number, well, in addition to number 11. Incidentally,
this season was darker, I thought.
I don't know about that. Yeah, maybe a bit more mature, but I don't know if dark is the right word. I feel like the kids are grown up, like you say. And incidentally, where do they get these kid actors? Because they're so good. Every single kid actor in this was phenomenally good. And particularly Will Byers. So good. And in fact, every performance in this. I thought Winona Ryder was better in this because it wasn't so shrill every single scene. Have you seen my son, Nemo? Have you seen my son? Like, yeah, everybody was really good in this. Yeah, episode 7, where Eleven went to the city and joined a post-apocalyptic punk gang. That was terrible. That episode was really not good, I didn't think.
Yeah. I thought also Sean Astin.
Oh, bless him. Yeah, he was great.
He was really good. I couldn't believe what happened. I'm not going to say because...
Oh, no, I had it spoiled for me.
Oh, really?
Because you saw it. When did you watch it?
I finished it maybe last weekend.
So it was really quite soon after it came out, whereas I'd waited for like another week, so the spoilers had filtered out onto the internet. But
okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't such a surprise to me. I mean, to be honest, I didn't get emotional at any point during this season, apart from maybe a little bit of the dance at the end, when, you know, I was just like, oh, it's all happy, and, you know, this is like the kind of happiness that I didn't have as a kid, and, you know, it's just like, oh, bless them. And then it's like, oh, the shadow monster's still there, but it can't get in, so what's the point of showing it? I don't know. I rate this as a good season. I really enjoyed watching it, but it definitely wasn't as good as the first one, I don't think. If I was to give this a rating out of 10, I'd probably give it like a 6.8 out of 10, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's a bit harsh. I think of the two of us, I'm the harsher critic, possibly.
You definitely are. I'd give the season one probably like an 8.7.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
I'd give the second season like a 7.6.
No, I think, okay, if season one was 8.7, I'd give this one a 7.
It's definitely not deserving of anything lower than a 7.
I'd put it as a 7, maybe, if not slightly below a 7. Like, because I did really enjoy it. And as you say, the cinematography is great. The music was great. Really, really, really loved the music in this season. What else was really good about it? Yeah, like I said, the acting was great.
I feel if the primary criticism is...
Fucking Steve and Dustin, the best characters in the show. When they were doing their buddy cop thing and talking about hair products, I was like, I want a whole season of this. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, I was going to say, if kind of like, I agree with you in the criticism that it wasn't as good as the first season purely because it's not like a new concept. I can't think of anything else that would lower the score that dramatically for it to be lower than a 7 or just a 7. Because if it's not new, they can't do anything about that. That's not like constructive criticism, is it?
Oh,
really?
Yeah, I do completely get that. I think it can be constructive criticism in the sense that they basically just returned to tropes that, well, not tropes, they returned to concepts they'd introduced in the first one rather than expanding on them. I don't think really a lot of expansion happened, if any, really, in this season, in terms of the mythos of the show. I would have much preferred to see it take, maybe not going into the Upside Down, but following up the energy company and go the higher-ups and follow the Matthew Modine character and go along that route. And maybe, you know, like introducing other psychics and, you know, there being that the
Upside
Down...
Well, they said that Papa's actually alive, isn't
dimensions.
Didn't they?
Yeah, which made me think, right, you know, why not develop that as a plot? I don't know. I feel like, yeah, basically the meta structure...
Probably because they want to save that for season three.
Yeah, but they have to, presumably. I feel like the meta structure of this season just wasn't... not that it wasn't innovative, but it just wasn't... I don't think it was as gripping, for one thing, and partly, yes, that is because it's not new, but I feel like, yeah, they needed to expand on what they'd done rather than just rest on their laurels. I'm trying to think of a movie which is kind of similar, like a sequel where they just kind of went back into the same old thing.
I don't know.
I'm not a very good movie critic because I can't think of anything. But that's
Thor: The Dark World.
I haven't seen Thor: The Dark World.
That's kind of the same. Shit. That's why I thought Ragnarok was so good, because it did subvert. Also, there was, I think, was it Winter Soldier for Captain America?
Oh, no, that was excellent.
That I found really underwhelming.
Oh, really? I thought that was one of the best. That's probably the best movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Yeah. I thought that the Winter Soldier was fantastic.
No.
Why didn't you like about it?
I just felt like too samey.
But the first Captain America was terrible.
Like, this is a superhero film. Yeah, but it was the first one. So it's got that, it can rest on its laurels, and it's telling a new story, and it's got, you know, it's got to be able to do something that might not be particularly kind of groundbreaking just to set it up. And then the second one came out, and I was just like, it just didn't feel particularly kind of intuitive for a superhero film. It's like, oh, it's a superhero film, so like we follow this formula, and
but it was a superhero film.
Like, the performance is very good. The filming was very good.
But it's a superhero film that's basically as if it was written by Aaron Sorkin. It's like a West Wing, House of Cards, or political thriller with a guy who's just a bit stronger and a bit faster than everybody else. Like, I don't know. I really
think
enjoyed
the category I think it fell into the it fell short in that it took itself too seriously, and I can't stand that with a certainly with a like a comic book film. The problem with Marvel, and the problem with that I'm going to anticipate for Justice League as well, is that it's a fantasy film, but it's set in a kind of universe that we consider real.
I see.
And the reason why I think Guardians is working will work, and I think Infinity War will work, and I thought Thor Ragnarok worked better, is because it didn't take itself too seriously. So it allows you to put that comedy in, and it doesn't mean that, you know, like if you're watching a film, I don't know, like Warcraft, for instance, completely fantasy, completely like absolutely like nothing, you know, you're just, it relies on your suspension of disbelief, and it can get away with that because if it does take itself seriously, and it can do because that's part of its world building. With Marvel films, the world building's already been done for you because a lot of it is set on Earth, or Earth plays a fairly important role, and there are humans in it who are meant to, you know, it's you're connected to the film in that sense. So when you see that it being taken too seriously, it's like, well, I don't, you know, all the time, obviously there needs to be serious moments, but those moments of comedy and humor make it more real.
It's like the thing that reminded me of Thor Ragnarok the most, or vice versa, it reminded me most of Flash Gordon. Because it's a campy sci-fi film in that it doesn't take itself seriously. It's gaudy and it's like, yeah, it doesn't take itself seriously. I think there's room in the genre for both. I think Guardians 2 is one of my, I loved the Guardians, both Guardians films. But yeah, because they are a little bit silly.
Spider-Man Homecoming is by far the best, I think is the best film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I think it was very, very good. I don't know if I'd call it the best. I think they're all. At the end of the day now, there's so many films that they're very, very different. And I don't know if you can honestly compare something like The Winter Soldier, which is, like we said, like a relatively realistic political thriller with a superhero. Almost a little bit more like Watchmen.
It's a different approach to the storytelling, isn't it?
Yeah, as opposed to something that, yeah, is a bit campier. I'd be interested to know our listeners' views on this. If you had an opinion, do write to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. But I think for now, perhaps we have bored you with our discussion of films, because we have talked about that for quite a while, sorry. And maybe we should go to Correspondence Corner, which is going to be accompanied by Dan's best impression of Chewbacca. Chewie, we're home. We're in the inbox. Would you like to...
Chewie. Easy, Chewie.
Easy, boy. Would you like to read our first email?
We've got an email here from Ketchera. It says, "Dear Messrs. Claw and Mark, a long-time reader, first-time caller here. Apologise in advance for how long these sentences are going to be. I've been wanting to write for a while, but didn't really have anything interesting to contribute other than just saying how much I like the podcast. However, Simon, a couple of episodes ago, you mentioned really liking Gustav Holst, and I'd like to share a little Holst link with you guys. Holst taught at two girls' schools in London, both of which I attended, not while he was there, obviously. And so I've always had a bit of a soft spot for him. For one term, I actually had form meetings in the special room built to his specification in my sixth form. There was a debate as to whether the double windows, think retrofitting of internal glazing that gets done to listed properties, were meant as soundproofing or as extra insulation to help with his asthma. But either one is a pretty good anecdote, anyhow. While I was also there, I got to play his St. Paul suite in the same school orchestra what he wrote the piece for. Wow, that is cool.
That is very cool.
More generally, thank you, Simon, for your PhD vlogs. Binge-watching them last spring helped me feel confident enough to accept my PhD offer to research repair of heritage in earthen buildings.
Well, wow. Hey, congratulations.
That's cool. Although the techniques I'll be testing have applications in modern buildings too. I'll enclose a link to the relevant article if you're interested. In particular, it was great to see it's possible to do other things as well as a PhD, and I'm involved in university fencing club, the Olympic sport, not making enclosures, and I'm also a keen swing dancer. Cool. You sound like a very cool person. It's not routines, they're all making it up as they go. Godspeed on the thesis rewrites, but try not to kill yourself with overwork. Also, don't worry about being old. I have a friend in second year of PhD, and she's 29.
Yeah, I actually get quite a few emails from people who are worrying about being too old to do PhDs. Like, it doesn't seem there's really an age limit. Like... Yeah. I don't know. I also do feel old because I spend so much time with undergraduates, like Dan, and I feel very, very old by comparison, considering that this year I'm nearly 10 years older than this year's freshers. It's quite depressing.
It's crazy. She also says, Dan, you are the best, despite your dislike of cats. Your forehead is a thing of beauty, and I'm so glad you and Simon are doing this regular podcast together, because I always like the vlogs that you're in the most. Oh, thank you. Although I have almost zero interest in gaming, I sit through these bits because your conversations are such a great balance of serious discussion, life updates, and of course, quality non-content.
Sorry about the stuff about the live streams then. God, this was a struggle for you this episode.
Jeez. Also, the fanfics are pretty top-notch. To answer the question about where people consume the podcast, I tend to listen on a Saturday morning before or while I walk by the river to fencing training. All the best, Ketura, aged 22 and 11 twelfths.
Oh, Ketura.
Brilliant compound fraction
she
there.
She says the stress is on the middle syllable, Ketura.
Ah, Ketura.
Oh, it's a very cool name, actually. I like that.
P.S. Guests could be cool, but not every episode, as I think they'd be able to slot into a general conversation rather than interviewing them formally. And P.P.S., part of me wants to start a vlog about my PhD life, but I don't really know what... I don't want to show my face, / lose anonymity. Any advice, Simon?
Oh, I think it is possible to do vloggy-type stuff without showing your face. If you want an example, CGP Grey, who has never shown his face publicly, although I know what he looks like because I met him. I'm not saying, and I can't tell you over a podcast because that's not how images work. But he did a vlog when he was in Las Vegas, and he didn't show his face at all. So it is possible, and I think Vihart is another example who does science content and doesn't show her face. You know, basically just with your hands. You can make it a stylistic choice, and it makes it instantly recognisable that it's one of your vlogs. So you could get... As anybody who asks about vlogging, I always give them the same response, which is just try it. Just give it a go. The only reason that I am moderately okay at making videos is because I just made so many of them. You learn from mistakes. So just, you know, try stuff.
And you can try those ones and not necessarily make them public.
Exactly, yeah.
Try them and get used to the process. And it might be cool to do kind of a vlog style where you record your narration in post in kind of one sitting. So it's almost kind of like you're narrating what's on screen, but from like behind the camera.
Yeah,
which would probably kind of lend itself towards a shorter vlog format. So maybe kind of like a short 5-minute video where you put some more kind of effort into the actual kind of the editing and the kind of the choosing of shots and things, and then you narrate afterwards.
This does actually remind me of my current viewing obsession on YouTube, which is a YouTuber called David Bull, who's a Japanese woodblock printmaker. And in his older videos, his videos are about carving and about the art of the print, but he will include stuff about his sort of life in Japan. And he does it, as Dan says, where he will film a bunch of stuff and then narrate over the top of it. It's a very, actually quite a relaxing watch. So maybe check out some of his stuff, some of his earlier stuff where he does the sort of life in Japan segments for inspiration.
There you go.
We next have an email from James Munford and his sons. Dear Messrs. Clark and Moore, rolls off the tongue, I completely agree. I too loathe people who take an age to get to the point in their email, so do my best to spare you the pain of having to dissect an essay for which you never asked. Thank you very much. We don't actually, I think most of our readers are pretty brief when it comes to their emails, but, you know, it's very appreciated that you're so considerate of us. Thank you, James.
Mm. Thank you.
On the point raised by Simon in the most recent podcast regarding his feeling of separation from the readers and their experience on the other end of the podcast in simply recording, editing, and releasing the pod into the wild each week, I thought I'd give an example of what the process is like in being a reader of the WikiCast. So this should be interesting.
Oh, handy.
It'd be interesting to see how accurate this is for the rest of you out there. For all you lovers out there. So James says, I commute from southeast Essex to central London every day for university, being an undergrad English student at King's first year. So in my many hours spent pissing around on trains, you can imagine the number of podcasts I get through. I must say, of all the drivel I've subjected myself to, yours is by far the finest. You know, that's a real badge of honour. We might actually have to put that on the website if we ever get a website. It is, however, sparse. Having your favourite podcast also be the most inconsistently available, frankly, one off on occasion. Right, we're not that bad. We've missed a couple. I think we've missed like 3 or 4 weeks in total. And also, we definitely missed one last week. Sorry, James. We're not that bad. To your credit, you are on a commendable streak at the moment. Thank you. And whenever a week is missed, a quick glance at Simon's Twitter to see his psyche deteriorating at the hands of a thesis is admittedly consoling. So, you know, it's understandable. My point is that loving the podcast is like being in a long-distance relationship. Whenever it's here, the sex is great, but having to wait sometimes 2 whole weeks for it leaves a sour taste in the mouth. Honestly, if you're in a long-distance relationship and you're only waiting 2 weeks at a time to see your partner, that's fine. When you're dating somebody who lives in another country, it's more like 2 months. This brings me onto the subject, however, of boldface guests. Yes, yes, yes. Guests are a must. Not because you two are on your own are insufficient. I could sense Simon's dismay at the prospect of having to dilute his limelight by a further 16.7%. Oh, gosh, I mean, come on, I'm the star of the show. But because by pulling a Hank and John and having guests on during weeks when one of you are preoccupied, you could solidify the regular schedule. I'd be more than happy to listen to a Moore and Guest / Clark and Guest podcast during an intermission of Simon gouging his eyes out in front of a screen of computer code. Or Dan, well, singing or whatever it is he does, rather than go wiki cast list for a week. Final notes, dogs, most definitely not cats.
Very true, James. Very true.
Well, I don't know about that. Yeah, the whole thing about guests is, I mean, really, it's more of a problem when I can't do a week than when Dan can't do a week, because I'm the better guest, sorry, better host. But also, more importantly, I'm the one who edits these episodes. I think it would probably be fair to say, Dan, that it would take you quite a while to edit one because it's not something that you're used to doing.
Probably, yeah. I mean, it would mean that if I was doing something with another guest, it would be easier to do it earlier in the week because we wouldn't have to try and find a time where we're both free. So it may work in that point. Also, I'm not entirely sure how about. Certainly, maybe after Christmas. But with kind of my schedule at the moment, it's a bit terrifying. But much like it is with yours. But you can fly through these pretty swiftly. Whereas it would take me probably quite a while to get used to it.
I mean, it takes me. I mean, admittedly, last week was a particularly long one. But it probably takes me about, I don't know, probably about 3 hours maybe. To do an episode, so it's much shorter than doing a video, but it's still a pretty considerable amount of time. But yeah, so the idea of doing guests when one of us isn't available is great in principle. Basically, I think in future, if Dan is unavailable, maybe I will invite somebody on, but the converse probably won't work, unfortunately, purely because Dan needs more time to. Well, for one thing, Dan needs more time, full stop. But Dan needs time to get used to editing because I have done it, frankly, for so long that I'm a bit of a wizard now. And yeah, it's not that I don't trust him. This might come across as me not trusting Dan to do a good job editing, because I would trust him, kind of. Yeah, it's more of a practicality. But I mean, to be fair, like, we could also just invite people. If we ever got, I don't know, Casey Neistat or something emailed us and was like, guys, I'm a really big fan of the podcast, can I come on? We'd be like, yes, and do an episode with him. A bit like the HTHG
podcast.
Or
we know that Lily is coming down.
So, oh my god, we should get so Lily really, in. Yes.
We could perhaps do one in and put it in the backlog for our special 20th episode.
Oh, you know who else is coming down?
Who's coming down?
Peter.
Oh yeah.
Now, dear listeners.
Oh man, what if we got Lily and Peter?
Well,
we did a four-way.
I feel like that would be carnage, frankly.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, Lily, amazing. Lily and Peter, for those of you who don't watch my YouTube channel, are two of our favourite people. And oh boy, yeah, that would be a fun episode. That would be really, really fun if we can get those two involved. So yeah, oh man, that's an idea. But yeah, so thank you very much for your email, James. We are thinking about these things, and guests is definitely something which we are toying with in our minds. He's also signed off with signed James Mumford, 18, 344, 487ths, which I can only assume. Actually, that's a very odd fraction. That must be to account for the number of hours during a day, which I particularly like. But he has also included two postscripts. P.S. The idea that Simon is a dog and Dan a cat is a revelation, and Dan proclaiming, I don't think I'm a cat at all, in the most cat-like manner possible was hilarious. You really did, mate. You were very cat-like.
Yeah. No, I remember listening back to it and going like, oh my god, that's actually completely spot on.
and then a postscript. I realise now that I did in fact write an essay. I hate myself, don't worry. Well, we don't hate you, James. Thank you very much for your email.
Not at all. What an email here from Lindsay. Dear Mr. and Mrs. Claw and Mark, as email is long overdue, and to kind of surmise the first paragraph, she's just saying how much she enjoys the podcast, which is really, really nice. She says it brightens her week immeasurably and has resulted in far too many grins and snorts of laughter in public / quiet study spaces. The tangents are the best part. Don't regret them, which is very, very nice. She also goes on to ask a question for me. She says, as a fellow English student, albeit English literature and classics, I presume, especially considering your choice in majors, that you must have to work through quite a considerable amount of text in order to stay up to date in classes. How do you manage the amount of reading, especially in between your choir and Apple roles? Congratulations on the job, by the way. I recently finished a course on Chaucer and Middle English Romance. Awesome. Well, which was incredibly enjoyable, but I often struggled to finish the considerable text in between other classes, especially to have to understand them with comprehensively enough to participate and contribute in class assignments. Ad Astra, Lindsay. Sorry for the lengthy email. Also, hello from New Zealand.
New Zealand.
Halfway around the world. I think I did quite a lot of reading before term started because the book lists were sent out. Then it's kind of a combination of I will usually skim read the books first at the beginning of term, just so I have a rough idea. And then when you know which sections of the books you're focusing on in seminars, or certainly what I do, or on kind of a week basis, then I'll do a closer reading. There's kind of loads of online resources as well, where you can get kind of like summaries and things, just because, as you say, some of the texts can be pretty hefty. I was quite fortunate this term in that I'm doing a poetry module, which requires just reading poems every now and then, but really it's focused on your own writing my own stuff, a module on Greek, early Greek poetry, which are all fragments, so they're incredibly short. So I've actually been really lucky this term. Next term, less so. I'm doing a module on Romanticism, so they're going to be pretty big texts. But yeah, whenever you've got the texts out, and they've been released to you, get reading them straight away, so you've got less to do during term time. And then also just reading on commutes and things. You know, there's oftentimes if I'm on a train or like going up to London or up to Oxford, I'll just read on there. And you can, I'm a fast reader, I think, too. Like I can go through pretty swiftly. Unless I'm not enjoying the book, in which case I probably won't finish it. I find it very, very hard to stick with a book that I really am not enjoying.
Yes.
But I guess that's if that's any help to you. Just, you know, as soon as you can start them, give them a start, and whenever you've got any free time. But don't jeopardize reading for, you know, like if you've got some free time on an evening and you're like, oh, I really need to finish that book, it's more important for you to kind of rest and recuperate rather than forcing yourself to read it, because chances are you're not going to take much of it in when you're in that kind of a mindset.
Very good, very good set of advice there, young Daniel.
Thank you very much, old Clark.
Another email here from Philip Magnus. Dear Mrs. Clark and Potter. That's just wrong on all counts. Basically saying, I'm going to summarise here. Love the podcast. Well, of course you do. You have good taste. A 24-year-old computer science major. And basically, Philip has given us a list of his favourite movies, which are going from number one to number six. Star Wars. I mean, it's not a movie, but it's a series of movies, but good choice. Harry Potter. Dan's obviously going to be thrilled about that.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I'm a bit sad that it's not number one, but sure.
Dunkirk.
Good shout.
I mean, to be fair, Dunkirk has definitely shot up my estimations. Like, it was a really overwhelming experience. Blade Runner. Completely agree with that. You still haven't seen 2049, have you?
Nope. I'll read it. I will have had it watched for next week, though.
You said that for the past four episodes.
Yeah, but then I went and saw a different film. I saw two films instead of one, so we had actually more to discuss this week. So if anything, I was more helpful.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, you were more helpful as an M-A-W helpful, which is to say not helpful at all. Number five, Lotter, which is Lord of the Rings. Again, I'm not going to complain with that. Fantastic. And then number six, interesting choice, Mr. Robot. Have you seen any of
it? Don't know that.
Is it an Amazon original? I don't actually think it is. It's available on Amazon. It might be like a Channel 4 production or something. I've heard a lot of good things about Mr. Robot. I might have to check it out. Keep up the good work. Regarding guests on the podcast, do it. And yes, thank you. Keep up the good work. It never fails to make me smile at the end of a stressful week. Best wishes, Philip. Thank you for your email, Philip.
I've got an email here from Ethan. It says, Mr. Simdan Mork. I'd like to start off by sending my encouragement to Simon as he finishes his PhD. Woo! It will all be worth it when it's over, and I can't even imagine how proud and relieved you'll feel. Also, Dan, you are distinctly cat-like. I'd have to say that I'm like... Oh, for God's sake, I can't read. I'm having a stroke.
Has that become like a...
Also,
thing?
Dan, you are distinctly...
Dan's forehead, could you please do a compilation of things we say all the time? Because I feel like I'm having a stroke is definitely one of the things we say a lot in this podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry, as you were.
And also... Also, Dan, you are distinctly cat-like. I'd have to say I'm the same way, even though I prefer dogs to cats. Just to give you a taste of how I fit into your demographics, I'm from Idaho. Wow.
Oh. Sweet home Idaho.
Thank you.
That's not how that song goes, sorry.
But from one of its only two typically blue counties out of all 44. I am currently, however, on university exchange on the Big Island of Hawaii in my third year of studying biological engineering, but I needed a break, so I figured why not. I'm definitely for having a film corner, as I consider myself a cinephile as well. What movies do you think would make it into the Oscar nominee list for Best Picture? Would you dare to predict a winner? Are you guys excited for the new Justice League movie? I can't tell if I like it or not, as I did just see Man of Steel, as I didn't enjoy either Man of Steel or Batman vs. Superman. Can't wait to thoroughly enjoy next week's podcast, Ethan. I'm not sure about Best Picture, to be honest. Probably Dunkirk will definitely be up there.
It'll be nominated for sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if it wins, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, typically, though, you do get a lot of the Oscar bait will happen at the latter time of the year, right? Or like, early next, because the nominees are considered until, like, I want to say, like, January or February in the year or something like that. Because, yeah, like, stuff like
Which
Whiplash
means you would have had Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but Star Wars won't win Best Picture. Star Wars hasn't won Best Picture since 1977.
No, it'll be certainly be nominated though, which will take out one of the other film's nominees.
But I don't know if it will. Was episode 7 nominated? I don't think it was.
I don't know. I'd be very surprised if it wasn't nominated.
It'll be nominated for things like production design and for special effects and for music.
Costume.
Actually, because as we know from that Sideways video, the music's different this time. John Williams is composing it before the edit, which is very interesting. Yeah, I don't know, actually. What are the other big flagpole things that have come out this year? Blade Runner. Blade Runner might get nominated. It will definitely be nominated for Best Picture. I would put money on that. I don't know. I don't think it will win. Although it is the kind of thing that the Academy might like, because it is quite interesting.
I think it's either going. I think either Dunkirk or Blade Runner will win.
Yeah, hang on. I'm just going to Google movies 2017, because I need to remind myself what else has come out this year. If Thor Ragnarok wins, I'll fucking rip my dick off. Oh, Get Out came out this year. That has been acclaimed by everybody. That might have been in the previous awards season. I'm not sure. Yeah, Get Out, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man Homecoming, Baby Driver. Baby Driver will probably be nominated. For
better not win, though. Otherwise, I'll rip my dick off.
Some smaller what I would think of as art films, like Call Me By Your Name, which is a coming of age film. I think it's Italian. And there's the Benicio del Toro film The Shape of Water as well. Oh, and Mother, the Aronofsky. Aaron, that might get nominated. It's I don't know, it's not a terribly crowded field. I think I would struggle to give you a winner off the top of my head. I think if I could see the nominees, I might be able to. We should do that. We should do a whole episode just before the Oscars where we predict and then, you know, grade ourselves on how accurate our predictions are or were.
Yeah.
That'd be good. It's not as crowded a year as in previous years, like when it was like Whiplash and Birdman. I think that was 2015, 2014, when it was like a really crowded season. This is not as bad, I don't think. Next, we have an email from Carolyn. Carolyn Clark. Great choice of surname. Dear Simon and Dan, my name's Carolyn.
Great choice.
Writer. Last time... Yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, she obviously has, by deephole, changed her name to match mine. She's a
That's how it works. That is how it works.
Last time I sent an email, I put Dan's name first, so I figure everything's even now. Quite right. There's like a cosmic balance. First, thank you for continuously putting out amazing episodes. Hang on, I think you've sent this to the wrong podcast. They're definitely one of the highlights of my week. Per your request in the previous episode, I attach a picture of myself listening to the Wikicast. In the photo, I was listening to the podcast while doing homework in a study room on my university's campus. I know I'm technically not commuting anywhere, but whipping out my phone to take a picture of myself walking down the sidewalk in front of strangers was just too weird. Props to you for vlogging in public, Simon. Well, I've got to say, it's quite a small study room, don't you think? Are you looking at this?
I am. I am indeed. It looks like it opens up to the right of frame, though, so...
Okay. Speaking of frames, I like your glasses.
They're very cool.
Very nice.
They're very cool. Although this
does... You do seem to be in the upside down. Everything is flipped, turned upside down. Well, no, it's horizontally flipped for you. I presume this was selfie mode, but we were in the middle of the episode Sukubuye, which I presume was Eudoxus. Very strong eyebrow game. You look a bit like Cara Delevingne, gotta say. Big fan. That's very nice.
That's very nice.
I've been meaning to ask if either of you have been to the Harry Potter themed bar yet. You mentioned it a while ago and I've been dying to know what it's like. As I live in Arizona, I don't think I'll get to go anytime soon. I would love to hear your opinions about it as I'm a huge Harry Potter fan. Dan, you went, didn't you?
Nope.
Oh, well, there we go. That was me wrong.
I do really want to go. I just haven't yet.
But am I right in saying that we know people that have gone and haven't been impressed?
I think there was some... They had some issues on their startup. I imagine I'll probably get some chance to go in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. And as soon as I do, I'll be sure to give a full field report as to how it was.
You should vlog it. You should do Dan's first vlog.
I'll do that. I'll do Dan's first vlog. Me going into the Harry Potter. I'll go in full Harry Potter uniform. I like how I said uniform, not costume, because that's how seriously I take it.
Yeah, they'll be like, "Welcome home, Chewie, we're home." but so to answer your question, Carolyn, neither of us have been yet. I would quite like to go before I leave Exeter after founding in. So that's not long, but hopefully in the near future. Thanks again for the laughs, Carolyn, aged approximately 22.1287 years old. I like that. That's good.
Cool. And then lastly, we have an email from Catherine Rees, who's in the GNS Society, actually, one of my co-MD and vocal coach. She says, "Dear Dan and Simon," nice order, Kat, "following your latest podcast, I have a few questions that I'd like to be answered. One," okay, we're going to fly through these, Simon. Ready? First thing that comes into your head.
Okay, right, hit me.
What's your favourite colour of paper to write on?
Come on, hit me! Sorry.
What's your favourite colour paper to write on?
White.
Okay, I prefer like a kind of like a cream, actually, but it's not particularly practical, but it's just very pleasant to write
on. Well, that's going to be taken out of context.
If you were reborn as a root vegetable, what would it be and why? Turnip?
A Swede. Because as far as I can tell, yeah. Swedish people seem to have a lot of fun.
Three, to be or not to be...
Okay.
Three, to be or not to be... I mean, that is the question, but I think the correct answer is fair, because I know Kat says fair all the time, which is why she signed off as fairies. Just mega bants, all the bants. And four, what is your favourite shape for sandwiches to be cut into? Thanks for your answer in advance,
now,
fairies.
I know that a lot of people really like triangle sandwiches, but I've never quite seen the point. Like, and the Ram have stopped doing fish finger sandwiches. Disaster in other news. But I'm a big, I'm a boring physics student.
Triangle sandwiches work. Like, it's a better crust to filling ratio.
It's better to hold in the hand, I'll give you that. But like, I don't know, I prefer rectangular sandwiches. I feel like non-perpendicular angles just weird me out.
No, I like triangles. I mean, I often don't go to the lengths to actually cut my sandwiches into triangles, but you know. Ooh, you'll throw back to when you used to live in this house. Can you remember how excited I used to get when I'd cook the amazing spag bol recipe I found, which is my favorite thing ever?
Yes, I do. Yes,
yeah, I made one yesterday.
Oh, does the house smell amazing?
It smells so good. It still needed about kind of an hour and 20 minutes because it's one of those kind of low and slow recipes, so it's actually just been going at the moment, and the house smells incredible.
Low and Slow, the name of Dan's sex tape.
I'll provide a link to my favorite spag bol recipe. Yeah, that's true. I'll provide a link to the recipe.
That's true.
It's amazing. It's such a good recipe. So, Simon, what have we learned today?
Well, Dan, we learned about the history of rail transport in Mozambique, apparently, which began in the latter years of the 19th century. We really didn't talk about this for very long. I mean, we did talk about trains. We talked about funicular railways and about us having trains as kids and Thomas the Tank Engine.
That early 600 BC...
portage method, yeah,
kind of system, yeah, which is very, very interesting.
From there, we talked about the Aussie gay marriage vote. Congratulations, Australia.
We did.
We talked about the Ottery tar barrels.
We did.
The insanity that of men just being on a flame. And then we talked about movies for too long.
Yeah, Kermit and Mayo. They read my email, which I was very, very happy about. And then most of today was Film Corner.
Yeah, a lot of it. And then we had some very, very good correspondence this week, I've got to say. I mean, we talked about a lot this week. And if you have an opinion on any of it, do send us an email, particularly if you think Dan's talking at his arse about the Winter Soldier. I'd be very keen to hear from you.
Sure.
But yeah, no, good.
Likewise, if Simon, if you agree that Simon's been massively, massively harsh on Stranger Things, then...
Fight me. Fight me, bitch.
Feel free to rip him to pieces. That's all for this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on your podcasting service of choice. You can like us on Facebook, and if you'd like to see our faces, check out our YouTube channel, Spongy and Electric.
Railway timetables, Ego waffles, and other thoughts on the show can be sent to us at spongyelectric@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you.
Join us again for another tumble down the wiki rabbit hole, and we'll see you next time.
Okay. Right. Sorry, this whole time I've been drawing a very high-definition picture of a penis.
Wow. Of course you have.
Yeah, of course I have.
Nice to know I've got your full attention.
Hey, I'm at full mast here.